Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This video is the next in a series looking at the financial implications of Russia's invasion of Ukraine on the global economy. And in today's video, I want to look at the devastating impact that the sanctions are having on the Russian economy. Since the war started on the 24th of February 2022, there have been 9 rounds of sanctions that have been introduced, and each round of sanctions has built on the previous one. But the sanctions that we've seen come into place over the course of the last couple of months have been truly the most devastating. We've seen the European Union introduce a complete ban on the purchase of crude oil being transported over the sea, and then followed that up with a complete ban on the purchase of all refined products. And in addition to those bans, we've also seen oil price caps being introduced. So in today's video, I want to go through the impact of those bans and price caps. So I'll have a quick recap on the current situation. We'll then have a look at what's been going on with regards to the shipping of Russian oil, how this is going to impact Russia going forward, and how it's going to be very difficult for Russia to be able to avoid the price caps, even though they're saying that they don't comply with the price caps and they're refusing to have anything to do with any countries that are signing up to the price caps. The reality of the situation is somewhat different. So we'll go through some of that detail. We'll then have a look at what's happened to oil revenues for Russia over the course of the last 12 months, and then talk about what's happening right now with prices and what the impact of the bans and the price caps actually are. And then finally today, I'll round up with my summary. So what I think the likely implications for Russia are over the course of 2023, what the ongoing impact of the current sanctions will be for the Russian economy. So before we get started on all of that, if I could ask you for a thumbs up at some point during this video, if you're enjoying the content, please subscribe if you haven't done so already. Don't forget, I always include chapters, so if you don't have time to watch everything, you can pick and choose what you'd like to see. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look below where you'll find links to YouTube Super Thanks and membership, as well as Buy Me a Coffee and Patreon. And if you do support the channel, it will enable me to buy more things like this. Russia's invasion of Ukraine caused an immediate outcry amongst the West, and a small number of countries such as the USA, Canada and the UK came out and said that categorically they would not be buying any more Russian oil or gas products. However, for the vast majority of countries, it wasn't quite as simple as that. Most of Europe had grown to become totally dependent on Russian oil and Russian gas over the course of the last 20 years. So much so, in fact, that Russia had actually built a network of pipelines all across Europe, which allowed a lot of these countries to receive supplies directly to their own refineries. So this was a very convenient way of doing business. And the Russian oil was the cheapest in the market. So it worked really well from Europe's point of view, and obviously from Russia's point of view, they were happy to sell large volumes to all of these countries. So it's taken quite a long period of time for all of those European countries to actually get to a position where they've been able to switch off the purchase of Russian oil. But on the 5th of December, an outright ban was introduced by the European Union, which is 27 countries. They're no longer able to buy any seaborne crude oil from Russia. And that obviously had a big impact on Russia because historically, the European Union was Russia's single biggest market. But that wasn't the only problem that Russia was facing on the 5th of December. Alongside the European Union ban, the G7 and the West also introduced an oil price cap of $60 for the purchase of any Russian crude oil. And the way that the oil price cap was due to work was that any countries from the West who were supplying either vessels or shipping services such as insurance to Russia would need to see official documentation to prove that those deals had been done at $60 or less. Otherwise, they would refuse to supply any of those services. And in a minute, we'll have a look at what Russia's exposure to those shipping services actually is with regards to shipping all of its oil products. But the European Union and the West didn't stop there. On the 5th of February, it was announced that the European Union had introduced an outright ban on the purchase of all refined products. So this related to gasoline and diesel and all of the products that you use on a daily basis. And alongside that ban, they also introduced a price cap on all of those refined products. So as it stands right now, the vast majority of the European Union is no longer buying any oil products from Russia. There are a couple of exceptions, a couple of countries who are finding it very difficult to actually find replacements are still allowed to receive oil through the pipelines. But for everybody else, there's an outright ban. So that represents a huge market reduction from Russia's point of view. But also alongside the ban, they're now facing these oil price caps, which are being applied to the sale of all of their oil. So let's have a look at the shipping detail to see how effective these oil price caps actually will be in reality. Now, before we go on any further today, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Atlas VPN. and to let you know about their amazing 3-year deal, whereby you can get full coverage for only $1.83 per month, including an additional 3 months extra and a no-risk 30-day money-back guarantee. If you use the internet without any form of protection, you leave yourself exposed to tracking, hacking, and advertising. Using Atlas VPN protects you from all of these. Atlas VPN provides you with comprehensive security and is used by more than 6 million people worldwide. So it's fantastic news that it will protect you from hacking and tracking and data breaches. But what's also great news is that it can save you money and open up a whole new world of entertainment, because it allows you to change your location, which gives you the opportunity to get better deals and to access content that may not be available in your region. Atlas VPN is available to use on unlimited devices for one subscription. And Atlas VPN is currently offering an amazing 3-year deal, whereby you can get full coverage for only $1.83 per month, including an additional 3 months extra and a no-risk 30-day money-back guarantee. So to purchase this exclusive Joe Bloggs offer, please click in the description below. These two charts show the ownership of the ships and the insurance companies being used by Russia for the transportation of all of its oil, dating back to January 2022. And this data is up to the 5th of February 2023. The scale on the left-hand side of this chart is in percentages, up to 100%. The light blue section represents ships and or insurance companies provided by the EU and the G7. The dark blue section shows ships that are insured by Norway. And the remainder of the chart is other countries. The chart at the top represents crude oil sales, and the chart at the bottom represents refined oil sales. So if we first have a look at what the position was this time last year, the total percentage of crude oil that was being transported using shipping and insurance services from the EU, the G7 and Norway for crude oil represented around 90% of all of the shipments. And the figure for refined products was around 85%. So obviously at that point, before Russia invaded Ukraine, Russia was entirely dependent on the G7, the EU and Norway for the provision of those services. Now, in order to break away from this relationship and reduce its dependence, you would have expected Russia to significantly reduce that percentage, but there are a number of problems that Russia has been facing over the last 12 months. Firstly, the demand for shipping services has increased globally. Because Europe and the rest of the world is changing its buying patterns, nobody wants to buy from Russia. All of the countries of the EU are trying to cut off those pipeline supplies, and therefore demand for the shipping of oil has gone up significantly over the last 12 months. And in the shipping business, it takes a long time to change the supply chain. We're talking about huge tankers here. They're expensive to build, and it's not easy to be able to increase the volume by hundreds of thousands in any one year. So in terms of the supply and demand dynamic, demand has risen significantly and supply has not risen significantly. So it's not easy for Russia to be able to find alternative shipping. But in addition to that, the problem that Russia is really facing is that the shipping industry is dominated by the G7, European Union, and Norway. A lot of the major international shipping firms are based in those countries, and they have the largest fleets and the biggest purchasing power. So unfortunately, from Russia's point of view, the market is entirely dominated by the West. And you can see the evidence of that in these charts, because over the course of the last 12 months, Russia hasn't really been able to reduce its dependency. And if you look at the position for the 5th of February, you can see that for crude oil products, Russia is still using these services for around 70% of all of its shipments. And the figure for refined products is even higher at around 80%. And the reason that this is important is that it relates directly to the implementation of the price caps. As long as Russia continues to use shipping services from the West, it's going to have to comply with the price cap, whether it likes it or not. Because those vessels and those insurance companies will not transport any Russian oil unless they have proof that the deals that have been struck have been done for $60 or less. So Russia may be saying that they're refusing to comply with the cap and they won't sell any of their oil below $60. However, the reality is if they do deals above $60, they won't actually be able to deliver that oil because they won't have access to the vessels or the insurance. And the insurance is really important because you need it to be able to go onto the open seas in case there's a disaster, and you also need it before you're able to dock to unload all of the oil. So if they don't have any insurance, none of the ports will accept the delivery of that oil. Now, as we discussed earlier, the price cap for crude oil products has been in place for a couple of months now, so it's becoming quite established. But the price cap for refined products is a bit more complicated because there's so many different refined products and they're all transported separately. So the great thing about crude if you're a buyer is that you can take delivery of enormous amounts of it in one ship. So it reduces your logistics and the transport costs. You only have to arrange for one ship to dock, unload it, and then you can start working on that crude oil and do your own refining of it. However, if you're buying refined products, you have to organize multiple deliveries. So let's have a look at the different types of ships that are used to transport oil products to get a feel for why this is going to be such a problem from Russia's perspective. This graphic shows the seven different classifications of tanker that are used to transport oil products. So we're going from the very smallest at the top to the very largest at the bottom. And to give you a better understanding of the problems that Russia's facing, I thought we'd start with the very largest vessel at the bottom. These are referred to as ultra-large crude carriers. These are absolutely gigantic, these ships. The very largest of these vessels can hold up to 3.7 million barrels of oil. So from Russia's point of view, this is the dream ticket. You load up 3.7 million barrels onto one ship. That ship then docks, which is easier said than done because there are only a small number of ports all around the world that are actually large enough to be able to enable these ships to come in and dock. In some situations, they actually have to have a transporting ship which unloads and then brings the oil into the port itself. But from a logistical and a cost point of view, putting oil onto these tankers is the best option for both the buyer and the seller because you've only got one vessel that you have to load up, you've only got one docking, you've only got one unloading, and at the end of the process, you've got 3.7 million barrels of crude oil that you can then put into your refinery and start working on. And Russia is selling around 8 million barrels of oil every single day into the international markets. So in a dream ticket scenario, they could load up three of these ultra-large crude carriers, and that would be their daily quota done and dusted. The next largest category is the very large crude carriers, and these can take up to 2.2 million barrels of oil. So again, very attractive from both the buyer and seller's point of view. And if you look at the left-hand side of this chart, you can see that these two largest vessels only relate to crude oil because these are the volumes that you're actually transporting crude oil in. If we now drop down to the next category, you can see that these vessels are used either for refined products or crude oil. And the LR2, which is the long range 2, is the very largest vessel that's used for transporting refined products. And that's because refined products tend to be ordered in smaller quantities. Refined products, by definition, have been through the refinery process and are therefore more expensive because you have to add on all of the costs of that refinery. And if you have your own refinery capabilities, then obviously it makes sense to do the refining yourself because you're not having to pay that extra profit margin when you're buying these products. So that's why the volumes tend to be smaller. And an LR2 can hold up to around 650,000 barrels of oil. So still a very significant amount of oil, but nowhere near as big as the very large or the ultra large crude carriers. And as we move up this chart, we've got the Aframax, which can hold up to around 600,000 barrels, the LR1, which can also hold around 600,000, the MR or medium range vessels, which can hold between 200,000 and 350,000, and GP or general purpose vessels, which hold between 70,000 and 190,000. So in terms of the size spectrum, the very smallest vessels carry 70,000 barrels of oil, and the largest carry 3.7 million. So that's a difference of over 50 times. So from a logistical point of view, it's obviously much easier to use one of the ultra-large crude carriers rather than 50 of the smallest general purpose carriers. Because you've got to pay the loading and unloading fees, the port fees, you have to pay all of the personnel who are on the ship, you have to pay for the fuel. So from an economies of scale perspective, it really doesn't make sense to use lots and lots of small vessels. You really just want to focus on using the bigger vessels. But the problem that Russia has is twofold. Firstly, a lot of these vessels are owned by the West. So that's one of the reasons why Russia hasn't been able to reduce its dependence, because there's simply not enough capacity in the market to be able to do that. And secondly, with regards to refined products, it's the smaller vessels that are used because the order amounts are much smaller. Countries don't want to lock into buying massive quantities of refined oil when they can buy crude oil and do it themselves. These two charts show the revenue that Russia has earned from oil sales over the course of the last 12 months. The chart at the top relates to crude oil sales. The chart at the bottom is refined oil sales. And the colour coding here relates to the location of the different buyers. The red section across the bottom is China. The light blue section is the European Union. The green section is Egypt. The brown section is India. The grey section is other purchasers. The turquoise section is Turkey. The purple section is United States, and the dark red section is not classified. And these two charts really highlight the problem that's facing Russia. As you can see from the crude oil chart at the top, Russia's revenues have decreased significantly since December the 5th. You can see the dotted line on the far right-hand side of the graph. That marks December the 5th, when the European Union ban came into effect, and also the price cap was introduced. Now, if you have a look at the light blue section across the middle of this graph, you can see that the European Union represented around 65% of all Russian crude oil sales. And for the first two-thirds of this chart, the European Union remained as the largest single buyer. However, over the last few months, those sales have started to reduce, and we saw an increase in purchases from China and India. And you can see that between December the 5th and the 5th of February, that blue line has actually diminished to zero. And the reason that there was a tail after December the 5th is that these were orders that were placed before December the 5th, which was completely legal, that have then been delivered after that date. But the overall impact in terms of Russia's revenues has been quite devastating. Prior to the ban coming into effect on December the 5th, Russia was receiving around 300 million euros in revenue per day. However, that figure has now dropped to around 200 million. So the revenues are down by around 35%. And if we now jump down to the second chart, you can see that this time last year, the European Union represented around three quarters of all refined products that Russia was selling. And over the course of the last 12 months, the European Union has remained as the single largest buyer. And if you look at the situation on the 5th of February, which is the date that the ban came into effect, the European Union was still by far the largest purchaser and represented around 60% of all sales. Now, as we discussed earlier, the ban is now in effect. So what we will see over the course of the next month or so is exactly what we can see in the crude oil chart. Any purchases that were made before the 5th of February can still be delivered. That's entirely legal. So we will see this blue section tailing off rapidly over the course of the next month or so. And that's going to cause a major problem for Russia, because the European Union purchases equate to around 80 million euros per day. And as we've discussed earlier in the video, it's very difficult to find new markets, because countries like China and India don't want to pay a premium price for refined products when they can do it themselves. And that's evidenced in this graph. If you look at the red section at the bottom, which represents sales to China, it hasn't really increased at all over the course of the last 12 months. China has no interest in these refined products. And in a similar way, you can see that the brown section, which in the crude oil chart is very large, because India has been buying lots of crude oil from Russia, in the refined products chart, it's very difficult to actually be able to see that brown line, because India doesn't want to pay that premium. So finding replacement markets for all of these lost sales is going to be very challenging. And as we just discussed, from a logistical point of view, it's also going to be difficult, because these refined products are moved on much smaller vessels, so there's a lot more cost and a lot more logistics involved, and also the demand for shipping is still extremely high. So it's going to be difficult for Russia to actually be able to find those ships, and if it can find them, it's very likely that they will be owned or insured or both by the G7, the European Union, and Norway. So that means that Russia will be forced into complying with the price cap, whether they like it or not. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video because there's been a lot of speculation, a lot of commentary that the sanctions aren't working. I hear constantly in my comments section that Russia is doing really well, the West is doing really badly, the boomerang sanctions have come back to bite everybody in the West, they're all going into recession, and Russia is going to come out of this even stronger than it was previously. But I think what we're actually seeing is the latest round of sanctions are having a really big impact on Russia's revenues. Oil and gas is at the heart of the Russian economy. That's what's providing most of its revenue, and that's why the sanctions have been targeted on those products. Now, I've covered off gas in a lot of other videos, so I won't go into it in any great detail here. But just to recap on the situation, prior to the invasion starting, a lot of countries in Europe were entirely dependent on those gas supplies. It was also being fed through pipelines that Russia had constructed. But over the course of the last 6 months or so, we've seen most countries moving towards liquefied natural gas. They're setting up floating facilities, they're putting things in place that means that they can stop buying all that Russian gas. And as you'll be aware, if you follow the channel, one of the major pipelines, the Nord Stream pipeline, was actually blown up at some point during the summer. So all of the gas that was being fed into Germany stopped overnight. And the problem that Russia has with regards to those gas sales is that in order to sell that gas to Asia, to countries like India and China, It needs to be liquefied and then put onto ships, and it doesn't have the capacity to be able to liquefy the amount of gas that it needs to replace all of the lost revenue. And in addition to that, obviously, it would also face the same challenge that we've talked about in this video of being able to find sufficient shipping supplies to be able to move it. So from a gas point of view, it's been an absolute disaster from Russia's perspective. So really, the economy of Russia right now is dependent upon oil. It needs to keep the production going. It needs to keep those sales flowing in order to keep the money coming through. And the sanctions that have been put in place, firstly, the ban from the European Union has cut off the biggest single market that Russia had been accessing over the course of the last 30 years. So that's had a devastating impact. But the knock-on impact of the ban has meant that Russia has had to go out and find new markets. So it's gone to India and it's gone to China, and it's had to offer large discounts to encourage both of those countries to buy more volume. And that's what's been happening over the course of the last 6 months. And we've seen that from the charts. We've seen the volume of crude oil has increased significantly to both of those countries. But unfortunately, the price has come down. They're down to around $55 per barrel versus the market price of around $85. So quite a big discount that's having to be offered. But the problem that Russia's now facing is that the European ban on refined products has now come into effect. So that means that that market has been completely cut off as well. And the dynamics of the refined products are very different. They tend to be transported over shorter distances in smaller vessels. And countries like India and China aren't interested in paying that premium. They would rather refine it themselves. So the demand for crude oil is still there, but there isn't that demand for refined products. So this means that in reality, Russia is now going to have to divert some of the crude oil that it was refining itself and then selling as a finished product. It's going to have to sell that into the crude oil markets, which is going to increase the supply of crude oil and potentially puts more pressure on the price. They may need to increase the volume of their discounts to encourage countries like India and China to take even greater volumes. And as we've discussed in other videos, the oil industry in Russia is geared up to produce around 10 million barrels of oil per day, of which around 8 million are being exported. And if they can't find those markets, if they can't keep that flow going, it's a major problem because Russia doesn't have anywhere to store the oil. So it can't keep drawing it out the ground if it's not transporting it immediately. And if it then has to cut back on its production, that could cause it major problems in the future. Because if you stop the flow from an oil well, that can cause a backup of all of the oil. It can start to clog up under the ground and cause you problems when you want to switch that supply back on. And because Russia has lost a lot of its trading partners, it doesn't want to get itself into that position. So it really needs to keep the flow going and needs to keep the volume sales coming through. But the challenge is, what price are they going to be able to sell at? Now, as I've discussed earlier in this video, Russia has said that it doesn't agree with the price cap, it's not signing up to it, and therefore it will cut off supply to anybody that does agree to it. But the reality, as we've seen in today's video, is that the price that Russia has been selling at is actually below the price cap. That's the bizarre thing. If they'd signed up to the price cap, they could be achieving $60 per barrel, but they're actually achieving less than that because they're going about it in a roundabout fashion. And now that we've got the price cap in place for refined products, it's going to be even worse. And as we've discussed in today's video, Russia is entirely dependent on shipping services from the West. And that means that it's going to have to comply with the price caps. Otherwise, those shipping services will be cut off and it won't be able to deliver the product. That means it will then have a backup of oil and it's going to have to cut back on its production. And that will be a really vicious circle if Russia gets itself into that situation, because it could find major problems in the future and have a long-term impact on the Russian economy. So I think the overall summary from today's video is that the sanctions that we've seen put into place over the last couple of months, specifically targeting Russian oil, are starting to have a massive impact. And I think over the next 3 to 6 months, we will see Russia suffering from these reduced sales and the reduced prices and the reduced income. And the deficit in the Russian budget is likely to be much larger this year than it was last year, because prices have come down anyway in the market. And so Russia is really under financial pressure. And it'll be interesting to see how long they put up with this situation, or whether or not they decide that they need to agree to some form of peace settlement in order to sort out this situation and put the oil and gas industry back on track. So hopefully you found today's video useful, informative and thought-provoking. If you've liked what I've said, then please give me a thumbs up. And thank you for watching this video all the way through to the end.